Good evening, dear friends. Thank you for joining us this evening. And today, our topic in our first chamber lecture, in our pre-chamber lecture series, is going to be the topic of the elemental gods of earth and fire. But today, as we introduce the topic of these great masters that are at the service of all of these forces of the great law, we would like to focus the role of the goddess of the earth and the role of the god of fire and constrict it to two definitive deities of the pantheon of the Aztecs. Because when we speak about any of these elemental gods, we will find their counterparts across all of the world's greatest cultures. When we look in the Hindi pantheon, we will find the very same gods as we find in the pantheon of the Greeks, in the pantheon of the Romans, the Aztecs, and the Maya as well. So what this is telling us is that it really does not matter if we focus specifically on the attributes of the Hindi or the Hindu god of fire or the Aztec god of fire. Ultimately, they are the same. It is just that they are referred to with different names. They are seen with different attributes based on the singularities, the idiosyncrasies, the culture, and the challenges of the groups that are working with them at the time. Okay? But let's start. As we go into the topic of the goddess of the earth, let's start by looking at Ometecutli and Omeciuatl. Ometecutli and Omeciuatl are the Lord and the Lady of Duality. They are the creators who weave the universe. And as we see them here in this image that comes to us from one of those great codices, we can see them here weaving together the fabric of the universe. The name Ometecutli and the name Omeciuatl, we can segment them so that we can get a better understanding of what they mean. And the word Ome means two. Tecutli will always stand for Lord, just as every time that you see the word Teotl, that also stands for Lord. So Ome is two and Tecutli is Lord. So this is two Lord or the dual Lord. And then Cihuatl is lady. So this would be Tu Lady or the dual lady. These two are the ones who weave the universe. And when they come together and that positive and that negative force manifests, they generate then a third resultant, a third force. And in this case, from the Lord's that are the creators of the fabric of the universe, there are four distinct creatures that emerge. These are their four children. And their four children, in this tradition, are known as the four Texcatlipoca. These four Texcatlipoca are identified by specific colors. And in their names, we will find some beautiful hidden teaching. The first one is Cipetotec, and Cipetotec is the red one. The white one, opposite to Cipetotec, is Quetzalcoatl, which is the white one. Then we have Texcatlipoca, which is the black one, and then we have Huitzilopochtli, the blue one. We do have a beautiful lecture about the birth of Huitzilopochtli. And as we see the birth of Huitzilopochtli, we will also see that there is a striking resemblance between Huitzilopochtli, the story of his birth, and the nativity of the great master Jesus. The very same immaculate conception takes place, and certainly the very same story of the immaculate conception is common, not only in the Christian tradition and in the Aztec tradition, but we also see the same in the story of Chimalma and El Kukulkan, we see the same story of Master Fuji. We see the same stories everywhere where Christified men have been born. So these are the four Tezcatlipoca. And as we then come back to these two weavers of the universe, within Ometecutli and Omeciwatl, we see that the very same wisdom permeates. In Omeciwatl, we see the presence of the cosmic Christ. We see that Omeciwatl is adorned with a very ornate tunic, and we can see that there is a prominent flint phallus within him. Omeciwatl is, on the Aztec tradition, he is known as Huehueteotl. This Ometecutli and Omeciwatl, which is the cosmic virgin, she is the one who wears a blue tunic. And among the Aztecs, Omeciwatl is Tonantzin. Notice that between them, there is, of course, the fabric of the universe, and that fabric of the universe rests upon a skull. That symbol of the skull is very important because it should remind us, of course, of death. But it is not the death of the physical body. It is a transcendental death, a death that is mystical in nature. It is the death that takes place when we work intently into eliminating anything that is truly inhumane in us. So, in this diagram, one of the hidden meanings or hidden teachings that you would be very prompt to be able to extract is that for you to reach the heights of Ometecutli and Omeciwatl, of these two great forces that are the creators of the universe, we have to go through a threshold of death. And it has been said that only those great masters who have truly died are the ones who are capable of penetrating into the Omeyocan. The Omeyocan is known as the 13th heaven. It is that space that goes beyond any concept that we may have been able to create here on our limited mind of what we think of God. It is beyond that realm where anything and everything that exists is unmanifested light, unmanifested abstract space. So Omeciwatl is Huehueteotl, and Ometecutli is Huehueteotl, and Omeciwatl is Tonantzin. She is our Divine Mother. So speaking of our Divine Mother, when she manifests, every time there is an arrival of a cosmic day, she presents herself in five distinct aspects. There are five specific aspects of our Divine Mother. So if you happen to have your little Gnostic journal, take note because you will see it useful to be able to come to back to this as a reference. In her first manifestation, our Divine Mother is the unmanifested Mula Prakriti. Mula Prakriti, among the Hindus, among the Eastern traditions, she is the unmanifested abstract space. It is, for all purposes, within the eyes of modern day science, that thing that is known as the dark matter. They see it, they cannot perceive it, yet they know that it is there. They can only conclude that it is present because of the intuition that comes by mathematics. But yet, the senses cannot perceive it. It is there, but it has not flourished into something that the senses, in our inferior senses, can perceive. So she is the unmanifested Mula Prakriti. She is the womb out of which the galaxies and the universes and the solar systems and the gods and the planets and the suns and stars and everything else emerges. But beyond that, in her second aspect, she is Mary. She is Isis. She is Ram-Io. She is Tonantzin. She is our individual and particular Divine Mother. In her third aspect, she is also known as the Terror of Love and Law. She is Hecate, Prosperina. She is Coatlicue. If you have a high affinity for the Hindi tradition, in her second aspect as Tanansen, she is Durga. In her third aspect as the goddess of hell, terror of love and law, she is Kali. In her fourth aspect, she is our individual and particular Divine Mother, the one who gives us our physical body. She is the one that, as we complete those cycles in the process of the transmigration of the souls, when we graduate with a specific level of mastery out of the animal kingdom, she gives us our first human body, and she gives us these human bodies time and time again until either we complete our transition into the next kingdom by working in the path of realization, the internal awakening of the consciousness, or she continues giving us physical bodies until the point that we consume our 108th life, and then naturally have to descend into the lower spheres of hell to take our consciousness, our essence, through a round of purification. And in her fifth manifestation, she is the magician of the elements. She is our elemental magi, to whom we owe every instinct and every vital impulse. The image of our Divine Mother that we see on the screen, this is Coatlicue, because Coatlicue stands for the one wearing the skirt made out of serpents. And notice that when you look at her, her breasts are deflated. That means that we have come to her on a stage where we are no longer ready to receive her nourishment. We don't, because Coatlicue, as the goddess of hell, as the terror of love and law, she is the one who governs the catabolic forces that destroy all of these psychological aggregates that we have created, but it destroys it by the mechanical laws of nature as the consciousness is descending, the soul as we know it is descending into the lower spheres of hell. This is why her face is terrifying. Not to be an element of scare, not to be a threatening element where we become afraid, certainly not. It is a spectral image like this one with the intent of giving us a shock of consciousness, so that as that consciousness is descending and purifying in as it goes through the nine spheres of hell, that semblance can give the consciousness a shock strong enough so that the consciousness can realize the consequences of its own creations. Very well. These are the five aspects of our Divine Mother. So let's then look at Coatlicue, the goddess of the earth. The first thing that we will see is that her head is made out of two serpents that come to face each other. We can see that on her chest, her breasts are completely deflated. And she is wearing a collar that is made out of leather with four hands. There is a skull that is very prominent at her waistline, and her arms are very close to her body. Her forearms are flexed forward, and her hands are like serpents that are holding two rectangles split in two. When we see the symbols, rather than just looking at them in awe, just like looking at them in terms of their artistic rendition and their intricacy, as students of this wisdom, we have to look for what is the meaning that these symbols are bringing to us. What we are seeing here in the representation of that head that is two serpents coming and facing each other. What that is showing us are the two distinct serpents that are characteristics in this this creation. Because there is one serpent that is a tempting serpent. That is the serpent that we see tempting Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. That is the serpent Pition. On the other one, we see the serpent of Kundalini. One is the source of all of our igneous powers. The other one is the source of all of our temptations. One is Kundalini and the other one is Kunda Buffer. In the Kunda Buffer organ, we carry a very strong hypnotic power. That is the one that keeps us bound and repeating the same mistakes and falling into the same traps over and over again. The serpent of Kundalini is where we find redemption. It is there where there exists that flaming power that is capable of destroying our own egos. This is why Samael tells us, for us to be able to live a life that is successful, we have to start by acknowledging our mistakes and correcting them. And of course, he is not saying, acknowledge your mistakes as in realize that you have offended someone and go and apologize, because that is too superficial. Though that is true, it is too superficial. It is saying, find what are those things that are keeping you bound to your suffering. Let's identify what are those things that are keeping you bound to these constant mistakes, to this constant misfortune that you have been living life after life. Because when you find the cause and you alter the cause, evidently the effects will become different. So here we have Kundalini as that source that can help us eliminate all of our defects, that can help transform us. And here we have Pition, which is also the serpent of temptation. But also, that second serpent is also a symbol of the catabolic forces of nature. The serpent that comes to devour us as we are descending into those spheres of hell. On one side, Kundalini, that could have redeemed us and provided that we lost our 108 lives and we no longer have that opportunity of working with Kundalini, then this other serpent, this catabolic force of nature, this aspect of our Divine Mother that comes to do the same destruction of those psychological aggregates, but now, not because it is voluntary suffering and voluntary work, now, as a mechanical means to purify the soul. We see her deflated breasts, and deflated breasts are incapable of providing nourishment. So as a symbol, what has happened is that with her being the goddess of hell, the terror of love and law, we have consumed all of our possibilities. Everything that was in potentiality, we gave it away. Because we chose to live that path of life that was horizontal in nature. Lives that had no transcendental meaning and no transcendental end at all. So now, we lost the opportunity to receive any more nourishment from our Divine Mother. Now it is time for our Divine Mother in this aspect to take care of those psychological aggregates and destroy them for us. We see a collar of leather and four hands. We know that leather has to go through a lot of treatment. It has to be manipulated and beaten and exposed to the sun so that it can be made useful to us. So those symbols apply in our lives as well, but more so to this particular aspect of our Divine Mother, because that leather shows in that suffering that the leather goes, in all of that sacrifice that the leather receives, that is also a symbol of the work that our Divine Mother has been doing with us while we still have our physical bodies. Every time that she has interceded for her children and we have forgotten about. every time that we have implored for help and we have received it, and once we have gotten into better conditions in life, we have forgotten about all the promises that we have made. We see all those wrinkles and all that abuse symbolized within that leather. And of course, the four hands that we are seeing two hands that are left hands and two hands that are right hands. This is reminding us of the many opportunities that we had to give and we did not, the many opportunities that we had to receive and we did not, opportunities that we had to offer sacrifice for others, that we had to offer sacrifices that were internal in nature, and we decided to not do it. Opportunities that we had to receive of superior wisdom, but we were too consumed and too committed with our commitments and all the desires of the personality and the ego. So we rejected it. So now what we see are empty hands. Hands that did not receive, and hands that were offering us wisdom, and now the wisdom is not present because we chose to not accept it. And notice that there is a skull in her waistline. That skull is a symbol of death, and it is telling us several things. For the purposes of this lecture, it is telling us that we can avoid penetrating into those inferior regions of hell on a way that is mechanical by working on the intimate death. That means on the elimination of things like our self-love, our self-consideration, things like eliminating our self-esteem, eliminating from us all of these ideas of how great people we are, and destroying our elements of pride. It has to do with working with the death of all of our animal desires, everything that has to do with animal passions, and everything that has to do with lust. The elimination of all of our ambitions, the elimination of our hatred and our remorse and all of our resentments and all these considerations of what we deserve and what others don't deserve, etc. When we work with an internal transformation, we continue working with the second aspect of our Divine Mother, with our Divine Mother Kundalini. But the moment that we continue living lives satisfying our desires, well, eventually we will run out of lives, and she will remind us as a way to give our consciousness a shock. But her arms, very close to her body, her forearms are flexed, pointing forward, and her hands like serpents holding two rectangles split in two. That is very important as well, because with her hands as serpent, she is reminding us of the power that she has as an unstoppable force of nature. You will see that on her shoulders there and her elbows. There are claws of tigers and there are the eyes of eagles. Every time that we see the tiger as an animal being presented, whether it is a tiger or a jaguar, this speaks to the faculties of the mind. Among the Aztecs, some of their highest masters, they were known as knights of the tiger or knights of the jaguar. And they would dress with the skin of those animals to identify their status. That is a symbol of, just like the feline, the mental sagacity. The sagacity of the mind to dominate the ego, to comprehend how the ego affects us. And she has those claws on her shoulders as if her being, a symbol of the underworld, of the terror of love and law, as in her being a foundation for that work of the mind. Because we can work with these forces to eliminate our psychological aggregates. than the eyes of the eagles in her elbows, because the eagle is always a symbol of the Christ. Whether it is an eagle or a dove or a phoenix, all of these birds, they are a symbol of the forces of the Christ. They're a symbol of the forces of the Father, because the Father is a multiple perfect unity. And those eyes are present because it is all-seeing. Everything is observed above and below, and certainly within those realms of hell. They are still within the domain and the governance of the great law. So everything that happened, even within those realms of hell, is not escaping the will of the great law. As you will see, she is wearing a skirt of intertwined serpents. Those serpents are, as a symbol to us, the many sources of temptation. And it is important that we look at temptation a little different. Because in the Our Father prayer, there are seven petitions. And petition number six says, lead us not into temptation. It does not say, spare us from temptation. It does not say, keep temptation away from me. It doesn't say that. It does not say, make me exempt from being tempted. Certainly does not say that. It only says, lead us not into temptation. If we were to translate that, what we are asking with that sixth petition is, give us the ability, the sagacity of the mind, to recognize those temptations. Give us the internal conviction and the strength to deal with the temptation. That means that we do not throw ourselves into it, so that we can be there, perceive it, learn from it, understand how we are reacting so that we can eliminate the ego. And as we do that, when we refrain from reacting before the temptation, we start stealing the fire away from the temptation itself. That means that we start making energy available for our spiritual practice. And those serpents are a symbol of those many temptations that we have to face every day. This is why that skirt is being held in place with a belt, and that belt is secured with a skull. Because that skull is the death of all of those psychological aggregates that are associated with those temptations. There's a symbol there that all of creation is a product of the union of two sexual forces. So her skirt not only is symbolizing us those sources of temptation, it is also showing in the intertwining that everything that exists in creation is the product of the fusion of two forces. One that is masculine and one that is negative. One force that is positive and one force that is feminine. You see? Masculine and feminine unite, and they generate a third force that is a reconciliatory force of love. Positive and negative unite, and they generate a third force that is neutral in nature. And that neutrality, that union of masculine and feminine bound together, that neutral force is symbolized by those entwines of the serpents themselves. That skull right there in her waist, it's not only a symbol of death, but it is also a symbol of our Divine Mother herself. It is Coatlicue herself. And we can see that the mouth in that skull is very prominent. It is saying, I devour men. I devour all of their desires. I devour all of their inferior creations. So Coatlicue, she is the goddess earth and the goddess of death, and her body projects from within the thighs down onto the feet in a way that is very peculiar. you can see that it is very, very well adorned, but that on her feet, there are eyes. Those eyes are not only the all-seeing eyes. It is also a symbol that must remind us that we must be very watchful of every step that we take when we start embracing life as a path to initiation. That we must be very watchful of every step that we take when we start living life in a way that can become an experience of a transcendental nature for us. So on her feet, we will also find within those eyes, skulls, and those skulls are the faces of Mictlantecuhtli. Mictlan is hell, and Mictlantecuhtli is the ruler of hell. He is the god of hell. So we see there arms and legs that are open, and they form a cross. We do not have that picture immediately available for you, but as you see the face of Mictlantecuhtli, you will see that his arm and his legs are forming a letter X. It is not, because it's a symbol of a pirate. It is certainly forming the cross of Saint Andrew. It is showing that in the cross, there is always redemption. It is showing that in the cross exists the mystery of our salvation. But it is also showing that in the cross there is the realization of the life that we may be living, which is a life of the horizontal path. That life of waking up every day and going to work to eventually become old and die. And there is also the alternative, which is that vertical path of life. The one that if we embrace it through voluntary sacrifices, the elimination of our aggregates so that the superior virtues of the being can flourish in us, can manifest, the path of life that invites us to sacrifice for others, that is the one that takes us into ever more superior levels of being that ultimately transform us. On her back, we see that there is also a phenomenal skull. And we see that it is also very ornate. So what we see in her back is the skull of Tonantzin, the divine mother that is forgotten by men. It is presented to us in this particular symbol because as we are living life today, in the comforts that we have, doing the things that we like, engaging in so many arguments and in so many nonsensical things, we forget of our Divine Mother. For many purposes, for many people, their Divine Mother does not exist because they don't think of her. They don't acknowledge her. So she is the mother forgotten by men. And down from the skull, we see a projection. We can see that there is a very elaborate mantle, and we see that there are two feathers. That is a projection of the universal fire of creation, and it descends all the way down onto her feet. Those two feathers are speaking us of the masculine and the feminine force. They're speaking to us about the union of forces that are necessary to materialize everything that exists. So on the back, we see from this projection of the universal fire of creation, we see the light of Tonantzin. And on the front, we see the shadow of Tonantzin. We would like to show you as well. In this particular image, you can see a different rendition on that collar made out of leather. You can see here the fusion of the two serpents with their four claws presented. You can still see the projection of that skull right in front of her. Friends, Tonantzin is our Divine Mother. Tonantzin is the igneous serpent of our magical powers. She is our Divine Mother that exists with us here and now. And she is the only one capable of destroying our psychological aggregates. Lamentably today, rather than people working with the goddess of the earth. They think that it's better to go and pay for a seminar over the internet. They believe that it's just better to go and get a reading from some fortune teller. They think that it's better to receive some kind of certificate that says that they have earned some powers or some initiations. And at the end of the day, the life sees no change. They continue bound to their own dramas. They continue repeating their very same mistakes. And at the time of dealing with their psychological aggregates, many believe that by stating affirmations in the morning, by creating vision boards, by posting images on the walls, by maybe reading inspirational quotes, that that is going to make a difference. And what is actually happening is that they are being like that man who looks at himself in the mirror and walks away. Nothing happens. They think that they can work and eliminate their defects by themselves, being void of understanding that the only thing that the mind can do is justify the mistakes, is call them something different, is hide them, is protect them with shame. And that just keeps adding into our suffering. It is Tonantzin, the only one who is capable of destroying our psychological aggregates. And when we see here in the goddess of the earth these symbols of these two forces working together to enable creation, it invites us to remember that in the sacrament of matrimony, one man and one woman can come together in a matrimony that is legitimately constituted, and they can work together in the super dynamic of love and transmute their creative powers in ways that, as that power is transmuted, as that energy is sublimated, the flow of those solar and lunar atoms up the internal constitution of man, that subtle constitution of those two witnesses before the temple, those two serpents that are known as Ida and Pingala, Ob and Od, the two flames before the temple of God in that book of Revelation. That flow of solar and lunar atoms, as those serpents entwine in the spine of that man and woman, results in an inductive force that awakens the fire of Tonantzin, awakens the fire of Kundalini. And when that fire awakens, the man is transformed forever. Coatlicue is the serpent of the abyss. Tonantzin is the serpent source of all of our igneous faculties and powers. Nevertheless, Tonantzin and Coatlicue are two aspects of the same eternal feminine principle. And Coatlicue is the goddess of the earth. All it takes is for us to look around today and see how is it that her kingdom is even at the expanse and the reception of all of our physical senses. Because what we see around us is suffering, it's abuse. It is a way in which our humanity is being precipitated faster into that series of catabolic forces of nature so that we can be liberated faster from this degenerative condition that we have walked ourselves into. Coatlicue has another name, and her other name is Siuquatl. And it's Siuquatl because we see here the two serpents coming together. Now, from the goddess of the earth, some legends have emerged. And perhaps you have been able to see or hear about the legends of La Llorona. To this day, there are even some very beautiful movies that our children can see over the streaming services about La Llorona. And it's good that the children see them, provided that we give them the fundamental education of gnosis so that they can also extract wisdom from those little movies, because everything is being done that can be done, possibly done, is being done by the great masters of the great fraternity to give us the chance to receive this wisdom and apply it. In the legend of La Llorona, Siuquatl became La Llorona as part of many folkloric myths. And what we see here is the story of a woman that is carrying a mysterious cradle, and in the cradle there is the corpse of an infant. Because she is carrying the cradle of a deceased child, of course she is crying. She is wailing in bitter lamentation, and she is out looking for her children. She is a mother who suffers because her children have died. You see how that has been applied to myth, how that has been applied to legend. Here we see Siuquatl, Coatlicue, as the divine mother suffering, crying, because her children have not effectively worked internally and gained that life that takes them to the other side of the river. They have remained embezzled in the dramas and in the addictions and in the desires of this plane of substance. And because of that, they have reached their last life. They have died. And they have lost all of their senses in their living condition. And now after their last life, they have to penetrate then into the spheres of hell to be purified of their own creations. Her suffering was caused because of abandoning a cradle out in the markets. This is the story of La Llorona. And in the cradle, we find that it contained the knife of sacrifice. So we see within the myth, we see here within the folklore, all of the very same symbols that speak to death, mystical death, to suffering, and of a mother that continues doing the unmentionable in love for her children. But let's transition from our divine goddess Mother Earth into the god of fire. And here we see Huehuetéotl. Huehuetéotl has been mentioned as a god that exists even from the times of the era of gold. It is the one god that comes and gives humanity the legacy of wisdom. We see that across all of the great cultures, across all of the world's great religions, there are always great men, great women, masters, illuminated. We can call them devas, gods, angels, archangels, masters. It really does not matter. They are certainly awakened humans, those who have worked internally upon themselves, and they have reached that perfect balance between their mind and their spirit. Now, ancient masters, they were able to put together these visualizations, these artistic renditions of the gods without becoming fanaticized with those images. They would be able to see the symbols and extract the wisdom as it applied directly to their level of being. They were able to look at the codices and see the colors in the codex, and with their magical ear, they were able to hear the rhythms and the harmonies within the codex itself. They would see the images, and within the eye of their mind, using their objective imagination, which is the same as clairvoyance, they could see the teaching unfold. Not like today, where we see that many of us buy our little statues and we put them at home and we kneel before them and we hug them and we kiss them. And we may justify it different. We may say, well, I know that this is a symbol, and I know that this symbol represents something sacred, and that is why we do it. But yet, we may do it then, there, at the moment. And 10 minutes later, we forget about all that, and we go back to doing and repeating the same mistakes that we have been committing for many years already. So, different than us, these great masters did not fanatize with all of these with all of this symbology and all of these idols. Huehuetéotl is the god of fire. And just like there is a goddess of earth and there is a god of fire, there are also elemental devas of nature that are gods of water and are gods of air. So we see here the four elements, and each one of the elements having its leading intelligence, its leading archetype. Again, for the goddess of earth, we have Coatlicue, but it's also known as Gob. It is also known as Arbarman. For the goddess of water, we have Tlaloc. Among the Aztecs, in the Hindi tradition, it is known as Paralda. The god of air in the Aztec tradition is Ehecatl, but in the Hindi tradition, his name is Varuna. And then, the god of fire for the Aztecs is Huehuetoca. For the Hindus, it's called Agni. So here we see all this pantheon of gods, and we see that they have different names, but they are always symbolizing the same thing. Huehuetoca, as we split his name, we can have a better understanding. Huehue means old, and Teotl, Theos, means God. So Huehuetoca is the ancient god. It is the old god. It is the god that is seen to be there from the very beginning. And what we know, based on all of the great histories and all of the great traditions, is that at the moment that the universe was fecundated, it was the electric storm what drove the fecundation of Mula Prakriti, of the unmanifested abstract space. So in that electric storm, we see the substance of fire itself. Huehuetoca is the god of fire, and he rules over the elementals of fire, just like Coatlicue is the goddess of earth. She rules over the elementals of earth, the gnomes and the pygmies. Huehuetoca represents an initiated master. So he is not only that god that rules over all of the element of fire, he is also a man that has achieved a high degree of mastery, but is also a divine being. He is also an angel. He is also the Ancient of Days. That image that Christianity has created about God, about this ancient man with long white hairs and a long white beard, that is Huehuetoca as well. He is our individual and particular Ancient of Days. Huehuetoca is the father of all of the gods. He is the father of all men. And as the old god, he is the first, and he is the final synthesis of our own being. The Ancient of Days exists within the very depths of the consciousness of every one of us. And every one of us has its individual and particular Ancient of Days. That Ancient of Days, that is our real being. He is the father of our father. And when he is seen as an old man with long white hair and a long white beard, his beard very peculiarly has 13 curls. That 13 is a symbol of the Arcanum of Death. So just as we saw Omecihuatl with his wife standing as they're weaving the universe, resting on a skull, symbol of death, we see that the number 13 is present within the 13 curls in the beard of the Ancient of Days. It is a reminder to tell us that the only way to reach him is through the elimination of our individual and particular psychological aggregates. We would like to share with you tonight a mantra that can be used for us to communicate with our Ancient of Days. Whenever you are in need, in those moments where you feel that you are losing interest for the internal work, those moments that you feel defeated, those moments that sometimes you're questioning if you really need to do this or not, as we go through that, we invite you to seclude yourself and find the moment of solitude. And as you are there, and you close your eyes and you relax your body, to invoke of your innermost. And invoke your innermost in a way that does not have to be complicated. It does not have to be fancy at all. It only has to be full of love. And you can say something like, Divine Father, Father of mine, you who are my true being, we ask of you and we beg of you with our swan heart that you invoke for us our Ancient of Days. We ask, Father, that you invoke of your Father. And as you're invoking of your Father, and you're invoking of the Father of your Father, as you're getting ready to communicate, you can say, Divine Real Being, we ask for your wisdom. We ask for your strength. We ask that you renew our longing in this work. We ask that you reignite your fire in us so that we can see the temptation, so that we can recognize it, and rather than avoiding it, that we can learn how to defeat it so that we can make that energy available for our internal work. And in those moments, when you are in that deep state of reverence, you can chant the mantra, Pander, because Pander is the mantra that you can chant to invoke the presence and communicate with your Ancient of Days, to communicate with your real being. And that mantra, you chant it, Pander. Again. Pander. As you chant this mantra, 5, 10, 50, 100 times, you will feel, as you start vibrating in a way that is very harmonious with the forces of nature, before long you will feel yourself inundated not only by relaxation but a very profound internal peace. And at that moment, allow yourself to continue chanting that mantra mentally, and if you fall asleep, that is okay. Just make sure that you keep your Gnostic journal close by so that if you fall asleep and you have dreams, that you can immediately write down those symbols that you see in the state of dreams, because there is wisdom to be extracted from those symbols themselves. You can do that practice at any particular moment, but when it comes to the element of fire as a natural element, Huehueteotl is the Inri of the Christians. That word Inri may be very familiar to you. You may recall it by seeing that inscription at the head of the cross, immediately above the head of the great master Jesus, when he was crucified. That has been incorrectly translated as Jesus Nazarenus Rexio Deorum, meaning Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. That is not what that means. Inri stands for Ignis Natura Renovatur Integram, meaning the fire incessantly renews everything in nature. The fire of Huehueteotl is the fire of our Kundalini. It is the fire that renews our nature internally and externally. So Huehueteotl is the Inri of the Christians. It is the Abraxas of the Gnostics. It is the Tao of the Chinese, the Zen of the Buddhists. It is the Agnus Dei. This is the God of Fire. These are the words of Master Samael Aumbeor. And as a sacred individual, Huehueteotl, Samael tells us, he is a self-realized man. He is a ruler of angels. Huehueteotl is a Malachim, ruler of billions and trillions of salamanders of fire. In those hierarchies of angels, We have angels, archangels, thrones, cherubs, dominions. We have Malachim, we have Kerubim, we have all of these. And he is one of those angels of the highest ranking. And just so you know, if at any point you were in need of working with the salamanders of fire, the temple of the salamanders of fire is always facing south. It does not matter if you are in Mexico or if you're in Arizona, if you're in Tennessee, or if you are in the Caribbean or in the Arctic. You're facing south and you're always facing towards the temple of the God of Fire. And the mantra to work with the God of Fire is always the mantra Inri. If you needed to work with the goddess of earth, and you needed to ask of her to help renew your physicality, to give you vitality, to restore the flexibility of your muscles, to strengthen your bones, to strengthen the quality of your blood, you can always face north. And it does not matter if you're in South America, in Australia, in China, in the Tibet, or if you are in Puerto Rico. You can face north and you're always facing them, the temple of the goddess of the earth. And you can invoke of her help. And the mantra to work with the goddess of the earth is always E-A-O. So, friends, this is what we wanted to share with you today. If you happen to have defects to work on, those atomic salamanders that exist in our blood and our sexuality, they can burn in ways that are very aggressive. Whenever we start stimulating our sense of touch, that is magnified so incredibly at the level of the creative organs. That moment that we start forcing this hypnotic trance in these elementals, they start responding in ways that can be very destructive for us. So if you're looking for defects to work on, know that these atomic salamanders of fire that exist within our blood, that exist within our sexuality, they burn uncontrollably with our own animal passions. So if you're looking at what defect can you focus on to eliminate, work on eliminating your lust. Anger irritates them, and everyone can feel the fire of anger in your belly every time that you are experiencing rage. So if you're looking for a defect to work on, try to understand those different phases of anger. Work on the elimination of your lust. Work on the elimination of your anger. Work on the elimination of your ambitions and your greed, and you will be making substantial and significant progress. And you will notice that in many images that we have shown here today, and in other images that you will be seeing in our lectures, you will see that there are many masters that are dressed like a serpent. That attire is called the Siuquatl. That is the esoteric garment of the God of Fire. So, whenever we see a great master dressed like a serpent, that he is being devoured by a serpent, that means that that is a master dealing with the internal fire of Kundalini. Siuquatl means serpent of fire. It is a symbol of the sacred fire of the Ancient of Days, the sacred fire of Huehuetenotl, which is the same sacred fire of our Divine Mother, Kundalini. So, when we see them dressed like that, remember, that is a symbol that those great men, they have achieved the mastery that they need. So here we have for you a practice, if you would like to make use of it, to work with the goddess of the earth. So if you happen to have your Gnostic journal with you, feel free to take some notes. But if at some point you needed to work and invoke the goddess of the earth because you would like to strengthen your bones, or you would have like to ask for your ligaments to become stronger again, for your tendons and your muscles to be more flexible, if you would like to work with the purification of the blood in your body, work with the transmutation of your creative energies, if you would like to invoke of our help so that you can gain emotional stability to deal with those many difficult circumstances and conditions in life. If you would like to learn how to make the most of your current circumstances so that you can raise your level of consciousness to those current circumstances so that you can be successful in life. If you would like to ask for the help of the Goddess of Earth to strengthen and protect the foundation, the walls, the windows, the ceilings of your homes in preparation for the many disasters that are upon us. Face north. Face north, and as you are facing north, cross your arms over your chest, your right hand over the left, and ask of your innermost to invoke for you the Goddess of the Earth. Divine Father, Father of mine, we ask of you that you invoke for us Coatlicue, our Divine Goddess of Earth. And you can say Coatlicue, Coatlicue, Coatlicue. We invoke you, we invoke you, we invoke you. In the name of the Christ, by the power of Christ, and by the love of Christ, we invoke you. And then you can open your arms up to the heavens. You can open your arms up to the down like a wedge. Down like a wedge. Sorry about that. And as you're doing that, you can say, Divine Mother, we ask of you that you help purify our blood, that you help strengthen our bones, revitalize our muscles. You see? You can say, Divine Mother, you know the adversities that I am going through, and I ask of you that you give us the necessary emotional stability to go through these difficult moments. You can say, we ask that you teach us to make the most of our circumstances, that we can extract the most benefit from these difficult situations that we are living today. And as you do that, you can then chant the mantra, E-A-O, like this. You can chant that mantra 4 times, and once you're done, cross your arms and you say, Divine Father, thank you for the help that you give us. Divine Mother, thank you for the help that you give us. May all of this be according to the will of great law and that universal charity, never my will. And then retreat and have faith and see your conditions change and your life significantly improve. So dear friends, this is what we wanted to share with you. We sourced all of our materials for tonight's lecture from the books, The Gotlaloc, The Secret Doctrine of Anahuac, Aztec Christic Magic, and The Mystery of the Golden Blossom. And of course, we are certainly very grateful to all the different sources out of which we gathered some images so that we were able to put this presentation together for you. So dear friends, nothing else for us to share. Thank you very much for spending time with us this evening. May all beings be happy.
I have a question.
Okay. Muy bien, pues Alma Liliana and Vicente are saying gracias, bendiciones. The same thing to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Geneva is saying, can you send us this prayer, please? Geneva, we can certainly do that. No better prayer than that one that comes from a pure heart. And our friend Isis Flores is saying the signal is bad. Isis, we hope that the quality of the signal improved as we were going on with our lecture. We know that we have had some problems here with the quality of our internet. We are trying to do our best to correct it. Hopefully these problems will go away soon. You say you have a question.
Yes, my question is, the lady that starts with an L, whatever it's called, is she real?
Hold on, hold on.